there are degrees to everything. Mm-hmm. And I think people that want to point out what those bad things are, because there's definitely a darkness mm-hmm. with immature masculinity that we don't like to see, mm-hmm. point that out specifically.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to ever use the general thing, toxic this race or toxic this gender or toxic mm-hmm. femininity, mm-hmm. right?
Right?
Toxic military.
The Adaptive Opposites Podcast.
Mindset, heart set, body set, and spiritual set.
We can be stronger for our families and our communities.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Josh Berkman. This is Adaptive Alphas Podcast. I'm joined always by Josh,
the wellness warrior.
What's up, buddy?
And we got a special guest today.
Yes, we do. Jimmy Story.
Yep.
What's up, brother? Thanks for coming on.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Glad to be here, guys.
Well, today we're going to talk about a lot of stuff, right? I think there's a lot of current events that we're going to go over, and we're going to talk about kind of what our goal is with Adaptive Alphas. And building, I don't necessarily love the word or the thought of men's group, but I really like the thought of like a brotherhood, right? But it's a men's group that we're growing. It's a brotherhood that we're growing. That's why we brought Jimmy on, because I think that you got a lot of insight into how what we're trying to do, what you've done in your life, and how that can help you, help us. But first off, you know, Josh, what's up? What's new?
Man, just trying to figure things out. There's a lot of things happening on a global scale that are interesting. I think we should get into.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, my family's awesome. My everything else is going well.
Right on.
Yeah, yeah.
Right on.
What about you?
Same, man. Teaching here at the dojo quite a bit. Our classes are growing. You know, our kids' classes are growing. I'm excited about what we're doing here. And, you know, Jimmy, you just met Jimmy. I met Jimmy a few weeks ago. And Jimmy, say what's up.
Tell everybody who you are.
Give a quick intro. Yeah.
All right. Well, just met Josh got 3 weeks ago. Kind of clicked. Started hanging out, long conversations. Yeah. I think this is going to be a continuation of a lot of talks that we even started yesterday and even last week, so I'm excited about it. But a little bit about myself, born and raised in San Francisco. My mother was an immigrant from Korea, met my dad during the Korean War. He was through several wars. He was a military guy and deceased in 1983, but he actually retired out of the military. I was raised with that kind of on my mind, you know, on my head. And then at the early age after the Beirut bombing kind of triggered this path that I would be on for quite some time, which was watching a Marine on top of rubble after the explosion in Beirut. And
how old were you then?
I was about 11 years old.
Okay.
Yeah, 11 years old. My father had just passed away and he wasn't around a lot in my life. So I was searching for some type of masculine or path to manhood or something. And that image just, you know, meant a great deal to me. So then that just led into the Marine Corps. And then the Marine Corps led into executive protection, doing bodyguard in Los Angeles, that type of work. And then that led into being an operator for Blackwater in Afghanistan for several years. And then that led into being a firearm trainer. And now ultimately, I'm in Salt Lake City and I'm the CEO of Iron Horse Firearms.
Iron Horse Firearms.
We're making guns and we're doing well and we're making some innovative products and just really doing what I thought my wheelhouse and what was fun for me. But there was a lot of divergent paths along the way that maybe today we get to talk about a little bit, or maybe in the future we get to talk about. You've heard a little bit, you know, about some of those paths, but it's been a pretty dynamic life and I sure am enjoying it.
Well, I think too, you know, like one of our first of our core values is warriorship, right? And Jimmy, one of the first things I found out about you is that you owned Iron Horse Firearms. And I was like, there's no way you get to own a firearms company without going through something, having a story. And that was one of the first things I was like, I need to know your story. You know, I love hearing people's stories. I'd like to know, you know, where they've been, how they got to where they got. And I feel like also when I met Jimmy, you know, I was like, oh, this is one of my soul brothers. Like, you know, whether previous lives or other things we've done, I'm like, I feel like we've done something together before at some point, you know, and I'm sure we'll get into all these things as we go, you know, but that was one of the first things is, you know, the how you got into owning these weapons companies, you know, and what was the warriorship that got you there? That'll definitely be what we want to get into.
Yeah, yeah, gotcha. I am one of a few owners at Iron Horse Firearms, but I also have another firearm company called Rain Six.
Yeah.
And that led into Iron Horse, and that was just, you know, kind of kicked off at a dinner in Austin. A lot of well-to-do people around the table that were brain surgeons and spine surgeons, and we had a Steinway piano, you know, contracted piano player, and it was a very wonderful party, but everyone wanted to know, what do you shoot?
Right.
And then I went around the horn and said, okay, well, we'll get to that. What do you shoot? What do you own? And the level of firearms and arsenal these folks had with the bankroll that they had, it was, I mean, I got like regular guns. They got some really exotic stuff. So go around the whole horn. I said, all right, what do you own them for? Who owns it for self-defense? And everyone raised their hand. I said, who shot in the last month? No hands. Who shot in the last 6 months?
No hands.
Really?
Where do you keep your gun? All right. No one shot in the last 6 months. Where do you keep a gun? Who keeps it in a safe? Few hands. Who keeps it in a safe near their bed or that they can get to quickly? Quick access. No hands.
I said, okay, this is my market right here.
Right.
These people, I don't need to sell them guns, although we sell guns now. And we're very proud of that. I need to train these people that bought guns that have a maybe a false sense of security on what the lifestyle of a gun owner or even just being ready for that moment of being a warrior is like. What does that entail? It's definitely not taking one class and then owning a gun and putting it in a shoebox or up in the closet. That's not going to do it. There's a lot more that goes into that.
Right, right.
I'm sure you can speak to that. You can't take a couple classes of grappling and then, you know, all right, I'm ready for, you know, prime time.
Absolutely.
So we really got into the how do we reach these type of people and really let them, you know, their minds delve and grow into the lifestyle of a gun owner, which is massive ownership, massive responsibility, accountability. I mean, if you're doing it right, it is a worthwhile profession and hobby that you know, it's performed at the highest level.
And your relationship with guns and ammunition is pretty extensive, because not only do you own a gun shop, but the little bit of research I did, you also have IP, right?
Yes.
So you've invented different facets of guns, right? So how many years of experience do you have in that? Because that's a whole other world, right?
Yeah.
Inventing.
It's fun. I'm a tinkerer. Right? I like being creative, put it that way. And when I was younger, I thought, you hear these people on TV or whatever, and they go, I got this patent and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw that really in my future, but I had enough good giants in my life and some good stepping stones in the grace of God to get me to a point where I said, I could do that. And the first one was a magnetic system to attach accessories to firearms quickly. So you're not dealing with whatever. If I want to take a flashlight from my rifle and put it on my helmet so I'm not flagging everyone with light, I can look around, I could do that quickly. Or whatever type of piece of kit. That was the first one. We got a patent on that.
That's cool.
Came in the mail. I'm like, I don't know what we're going to do with this product, but I got this patent. That's neat. So that was kind of scratching the surface. Then I got heavily into crypto because I had a boy that was working with me in Afghanistan, and he told me in 2008, he's like, hey, you should get into Bitcoin. It's $300 a coin right now.
Oh,
and
shit.
Dude, really? I heard stories. I heard stories when it was like the first time I probably heard of that was like $17.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was maybe 2006 or five. And it was just going over my head. And I like to think I'm an early adopter and that I can catch on to technology. But it wasn't really taking seed or making a lot of sense to me. And there was probably enough intimidation being a little bit older. I mean, I grew up playing video games, but crypto is a whole different thing.
Right.
Like, how does this digital even make sense? Until I started realizing, okay, fraud, waste, and abuse, and being able to track, you know, purchases and, you know, in the government, right? No more bad wars because everyone has to be accountable for where the money's going. No more shipping billions of dollars, you know, to some warlord to have under his castle. So that kind of stuff excited me about it. Then the most important thing that excited me was, how do I apply non-fungible tokens? I started learning about that years ago to firearms, because every investigation, there's a skip trace on a gun with a serial number. Now you have law enforcement officials spending, you know, tens and tens of hours, all kinds of money. if you were using a firearm and you had, let's just say, an altercation, you didn't shoot anyone, but the cops were called up and they say, oh, what gun was it? And you show them the gun. They're like, we're going to take this in evidence. But you didn't even do anything wrong. Let's just say it was totally good and righteous what you did.
Right.
That thing is going to be in evidence maybe for a year or 2 years. When you have a non-fungible token representing a real-world asset, they'd be able to see the serial number on the gun.
Yep.
You'd be able to show them the token on your phone because there's no other one on the planet like it.
Yep.
And it wouldn't say your name. Yep. So we don't want registration.
Right, right.
All we want is make, model, serial number. Roger that. That's your gun. Go on your way.
So, Josh, are you familiar with what he's talking about when he's talking about NFTs, non-fungible tokens? So
he's explaining it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's easy, right?
Yeah.
But what he's talking about is a digital twin. So he's saying NFTs, but before NFT was popularized, it was called a digital twin.
Right.
So how do I take an item, this can, and how do I stamp something on this that makes it traceable in the digital world?
Right, right.
And that would be its digital twin. So no matter where this goes.
So you don't have to take my can.
Yes.
I'm keeping my gun.
Right.
And you can have the digital token.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And so, and that would also make it, it would be like the Mona Lisa having a stamp that is non-fungible. So no one could say that this wasn't the first copy ever made because it has a digital twin, right? It's traceable. So it's like a barcode and I could scan it. Super badass.
Right.
Like so cool.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
And
you did this.
Oh yeah, I have that IP also.
How do you get an IP on blockchain tech?
Get a patent on how that token represents firearms in this case for the use case of, one, proving it's mine. That's huge.
Yep.
Two, if I met Josh a month ago and we started talking guns and I happen to not think he's up to anything weird, just a normal dude. And he says, yeah, you have that gun? I've been looking for that. If I want to sell him that gun right now, the way the laws are written, that's completely legal to do. He's a state, you know, citizen of Utah. So I could sell him that. But instead of doing a bill of sale, why don't I just QR code the token over to Josh now.
Right.
And then if the law ever came after me, they'd say, hey, do you have this firearm? I'd be like, yeah, I met this guy, sold it to him. Cool dude. Well, do you have any info on it? Yeah, it was on this date. It was transferred to this wallet.
So cool. Okay. Yeah. And then it's locked in the blockchain. So you can't change it. You can't alter that transaction. It's forever locked into a system, a computational system that goes on forever. And it's a blockchain, right? It's so cool. I understand it for sure. I understand blockchain for sure.
Okay, now you got me going on crypto. So one last thing about it. This is kind of the power of the NFT. I mean, people are doing like, you know, lions and like Michael Jordan shooting. All of that kind of stuff is fun. I'm glad because it brings awareness to what an NFT is.
Right.
But then think about Carfax. You want to know, was this car maintained right before you purchase it? Things like that.
Yes.
Think about a fire that happens. Or in my case, I had a badass 66 Chevelle that I did a lot of work to. Dude, I moved 3 times while owning that car. A lot of those documents were lost. So like, what was the dimensions of the cam, right? When did I do this upgrade on the brakes? When did I put in, you know, this whatever, you know, performance upgrade, you know, the air or the new exhaust? All of those little things could have been on not a non-fungible token, but a token that you can actually adjust. And then I could have at least just have a record of myself. Because for the guns, we would sell or we would have 2 of them. One would be non-fungible for what we talked about before. The second one would be how many rounds went through that barrel? What was my dope at that range with this? How many guns do I own? So if you got robbed or if there was a fire or a boating accident, if you ever hear about that, that happens too. You got all that stuff right there and you don't have to go to maybe a safe deposit box or try to put the pieces back together.
So you're a believer that crypto is the future, right? So you got the crypto bug. Are you on that same boat, Josh?
No, I'm a little different. I think that we might go that route, but I think that also, you know, I think that I'm not necessarily prepared for that. You know, it's the same thing of, you know, the way that I do my work, I do it in the dojo. I do it person to person. You know, I think that there has to be a big decline or fall in the financial system possibly before crypto becomes something. And I think that if those things happen, I live my life in a way that I believe that I'll be guided and protected to be able to transition when those things happen. I also think that going to a cashless society is going to be a dangerous time. And I think that people should worry about getting through that time before we're getting to the cashless society, because I think there will be a lot of destruction and civil war to be able to re-implement a cashless society. So, no, I'm not on it yet, but I know that I have a lot of people around me that are, just in case, you know, I needed to get some food or something.
It's like, hey, I need a problem. So you own Bitcoin, right?
No, I don't own Bitcoin.
You heard about it back in 2008.
Yeah, I heard about it. Okay. So he's talking my love language now when we talk destruction and zombie apocalypse. It's just going to get better and better.
Do you own crypto?
I'm not a – crypto is a very small part of what I do. Right. I like some use case and what it does. I love using, so I have the crypto.com, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
I do the credit card. It's fun. Uh-huh. I'm getting major rewards on that, and I'm actually glad that I'm not supporting some of the other institutions that I just don't believe in.
Right.
So I'm all about, I'm going to spend my money and vote with my money, and if someone or a company rubs me the wrong way, I'm popping smoke. It's like, you know, F you then.
Right.
I'll just go right over here. That coffee or that whatever, you know, tastes the same to me. It doesn't really matter.
Exactly.
But crypto is a very small part. I do the crypto.com. Mm-hmm. I do that. That's fun. And that's a small part of it. I do precious metals. As a matter of fact, when I bounce from here, I'm seeing my dealer. Silver just bounced a dollar in the last 24 hours, dollar plus. Right. And I've been calling it for a few weeks now because I've been watching the, you know, different people in the precious metal sector talking about what's going on. Then you have Canada talking about current events.
Right.
Anyone with the convoy or anyone that supports Trump, we're going to seize your assets. That's scary stuff.
Yes.
Banks were closing in Ireland 4 months ago. Right. We know it hit Cyprus about a decade ago where there was a run on the banks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, my wife went out to Chase to move some money around, you know, and our friends are doing the same thing right now. She said, you're not going to believe this. Sent me a picture. Permanently closed here in Salt Lake. I forget the address, but right here in Salt Lake, Chase.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. So guns, ammo, a little bit of everything. I'm pretty well positioned as best as I can.
I mean, even food storage. We were at Costco yesterday. I was like, let's grab two more bags of rice, baby. You know, because I think that – and talking about that and current events, right? Like Russia just invaded Ukraine, right? Like that's
a strong word, invaded.
But they are invading, right? I mean, they're going places they're not necessarily they're wanted, right? Yeah. You know, and so I think that, you know, that's a good lead into one of the reasons that we wanted you to come today, and what we're doing with Adaptive Alphas. And Adaptive Alphas is we need to secure ourselves and our families. So just in case, right? Hope for the best, prepare for the worst, right? It's kind of like that. But also, I have a brother and a dad, and my brother is my best friend. And if there was ever a problem, I could call my brother and my dad, and they would be out front and they would help me with anything that I ever needed help with. And they could call me for the same thing, right? And that's kind of what we're trying to – what we are creating with Adaptive Alphas is a men's group and a brotherhood that is full of strong men, whether it be physically, whether it be emotionally, whether it be intellectually, that can fill different spaces for each other when it's needed. And I feel like, you know, it's something I want to get into is like, why do we think that a brotherhood is needed? Because there's a lot of them out there and a lot of people are doing it. And I think that you can speak on that a lot. And I think that, you know, the same thing with you. I mean, Josh, why are we wanting to create a men's group? Why did you come to me and say, Josh, let's create a men's group? Because it wasn't about a podcast.
Exactly.
It wasn't about – I didn't have this gym yet. We didn't have a space yet.
Yep.
But it was, let's create a men's group. And you know, why did you come to me?
Well, I think the way that we're defining it isn't just another men's group, because they do exist, and like LinkedIn is a place, right, for business owners and people to meet. But I think the way that we're defining it, which is a space where – divergent thinking is welcomed, where people with a diverse background and diverse skill sets can all come together and share and intellectualize and philosophize. And as long as that kind of undercurrent of like, we're just looking for truth, right? We're looking for for each to sharpen each other, right? To make each other better. I don't think those exist. I think there's men's groups that come together and, you know, they talk about sports and they talk about business and different things, but they don't come and say, hey, I'm struggling in my marriage. I'm struggling in my relationship.
Right.
That level of vulnerability, I think, is why we call it brotherhood rather than just a men's group.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And so I think that at least in my short time on this earth, everything I see has kind of been corporatized and everything is maximized for money. And if there's no kind of capital incentive, then there's no purpose. But we know that some of the most peak experiences in our life have nothing to do with money. Right. So that's kind of an overview of how I see this brotherhood coming together. And I didn't even hear, you know, beforehand about what you and Jimmy were talking about, which was Junto, Benjamin Franklin. And so,
yeah.
Jimmy, what's your background in that in your kind of are you currently a part of a Junto?
Well, unofficial. I mean, unorganized, but that's what we call it.
Right.
So my friends in California and Austin, Texas, and one just moved to Idaho up in Washington, we call our small group the Junto. Benjamin Franklin, first of all.
Junto or Junto?
Junto.
Junto. Oh, yeah. Junto.
Yep.
That's what it's called?
Yeah.
Why am I calling it Junto? Am I
pronouncing it? A lot of people call it
both. Junto just means together. So Junto means together in Spanish, right?
Yeah. Junto. So together.
Okay. Yeah.
It's funny because on the news rolling into work today, they're calling. So there's another group that is a military group that moves into another country and then basically takes power. Mm-hmm. That's the Junta.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So not to be confused, if you're hearing that on the news right now, we're not the Junta. We're the Junto.
Isn't that from Mulan? Junta? Wasn't that a Mulan thing?
I haven't seen it.
Okay. I'll Disney take movie.
But he's got a 13-year-old daughter. He's got a 13-year-old daughter.
So when you said sharpen each other,
that's
biblical. Mm-hmm. Iron sharpens iron. Okay. And that's why I like this cat so much, because I can see that there's a lot of sharpening going on. And there's a lot of great, deep conversations that men just aren't having.
Right.
And I think Robert Bly just says it so well in the book Iron John. Yeah. Who's read that?
My dad's told me all about it, actually.
Okay.
And he's always you've got to read this book. So that might be on our reading material.
It's our reading list.
Yeah,
so just so you guys
John.
Know.
And, you know, you can go to YouTube. I mean, there's so many people that talk about what he's saying in there. And it comes from the book from the 1820s, the Grimm brothers wrote. But every man has a wild man inside mm-hmm. of him. And when we don't want to go there to touch the wild man, to really be free and expressive and strong, they get scared. Then it goes back to, so how was the game the other night? I don't want to go too deep. I want to touch into the wild man territory.
Stick on events.
Mm-hmm. So we keep it superficial and we keep it very weak. And there's a lot of reasons for that, from the Industrial Revolution till now. Before, grandpas, fathers, sons lived extremely close by each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
After the Industrial Revolution, the nuclear family, which is still a good thing, it's like a race car sitting in the pits. It's the right tool for the track, but if you don't take it out and run it, you're not getting the use out of the race car.
I need you to say that again. It's the right tool for the track. That's very powerful.
That's the way I see it. Mm-hmm. And the nuclear family is great, but if we're not raising the problem, hey, let's look at Ukraine and Russia. Let's look at what we did, you know, in Libya. Mm-hmm. There are problems around the world. There are problems in our own country that we can spend forever pointing the finger at, you know, and blaming. If men were being raised in a different way, and I'm talking really, unfortunately, in a lot of ways outside of the West and a lot of primal countries where they still are recognized when they go from boyhood to manhood.
Mm-hmm.
And they sacrifice something. They're recognized for something.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to make better people. And it's harder to do when the grandpa is not giving the grandpa energy to the boy, the father. They're doing things together. There's a natural progression where the Latin word is lemonot, the threshold. When you move from one room to another, and in this country, we have a lot of immature masculinity, boys that don't want to grow up to be men.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Absolutely. But they'll grow up to slay women, party hard, rock concert, okay? Mm-hmm. Make money.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very immature masculinity.
And I like that phrase better than toxic masculinity, and the way that toxic, which is part of the reason threw the shirt on today.
Great shirt.
Because it's more of an immaturity. Mm-hmm. It's masculine is strong, and it's protective, and it's providing, right? Mm-hmm. It's not toxic when it's been developed, right? And I think that's part of, like, you know, I think the misconception of masculinity is it's like, no, my wife loves my masculinity because she feels safe around me. She feels provided for around me, you know, and I think that that's one of the reasons I've had a hard time with the toxic masculinity in this almost like assault on masculinity. It's like, no, masculinity is not bad. And we need that for our families, and we need that for our society. Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think so. It's a gross, almost criminal generalization.
Right, right.
Toxic masculinity. Well, there are degrees to everything. Mm-hmm. And I think people that want to point out what those bad things are, because there's definitely a darkness mm-hmm. with immature masculinity that we don't like to see, mm-hmm. point that out specifically.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to ever use the general thing, toxic this race or toxic this gender or toxic femininity, mm-hmm. right?
Right?
Toxic military.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been in lots of organizations. There's always a 10% or whatever that don't. It's like cops, right? Law enforcement's a good example.
Absolutely.
One cop does something, it's like, let's just denounce all of them and defund them.
Mm-hmm.
There's degrees to it. What you want to do is, so in the world we're living in today, you see bathwater, you want to just throw everything out because people are so hypersensitive.
Right.
And there's a whole story that we're going to get back to about masculinity of why people are doing this, not just males, but females.
Right.
You want to throw the bathwater out, but we want to keep the good stuff.
Okay? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Eat the meat, spit out the bones. Mm-hmm. We'll all be better off for it versus saying one person at this company said that or whatever. And now we're canceling, you know, the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
right? Or we're throwing out everything here and all the goodness here because we just don't want to face it and we don't want to debate about it.
Right.
Because men and people just aren't being – they're not being pushed to their limits. The wings are getting clipped when they're young. Mm-hmm. They can't get that lift. They're not growing any muscles. So then when they're, you know, being threatened or they feel threat, they think they're going to fall and splat on the ground. So – people are acting out in a way that's disproportionate to what's actually going on.
Right. Wow. Yeah.
And we've even had those conversations about, which was just a really good point. It's almost like American culture lacks a rite of passage for young men, mm-hmm. right? And there's in warrior style societies and in tribal societies, there's always been a form of a rite of passage, right? Whether it be going on a vision quest or whether it be going out on the hunts. And my wrestling coach said to me right after high school, he said, "You passed." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "There is not a lot of rite of passages for men in the United States. And wrestling is one of the last ones left. And you passed it with flying colors." And I was like, interesting. And I didn't really realize what that was until I decided to start leaving Utah to pursue the great champions of mixed martial arts. And when I came back home, everybody was still the same. But I had grown and I was different. But I wasn't scared to leave a comfortable environment to go on these quests to become better, to become great. But I also had conversations with my friends around the same time, 19, 20, 21 years old, that they were comfortable. They didn't want to leave. They didn't want to. And a lot of them friends are still very similar to who they were when mm-hmm. we were 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, they haven't changed much except for now they just kind of work harder and have some nicer things. Mm-hmm. But they're very much still the same emotional person with mm-hmm. worse habits.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, you know, like how relative that is to the rite of passage that my coach was speaking about. But I do know that the main reason that I'm focused on creating this system within the dojo is because I have a 7-year-old son and a 9-year-old son that I don't want the school to just be able to – I don't want to pass them off every day and be like, here, teach my kids to be –
complacent.
Yeah, employees even. Yep. You know what I mean? Or to be of subjects of something else. No, I want to teach them these skills of warriorship, of getting knocked down, of getting back up, of, and, you know, I think that not only do I want to do that for my kids, and that was the way that we kind of connected too, is you're like, oh, I have a 9-year-old son. I'm like, I have a 9-year-old son, you know, and that gives us commonality even with your daughter, you know, and it's like, well, one, I'm a father, one, I'm a husband, and I want to provide and be a good man for my family, but I also want to do that and provide that for my boys, so they can have, so they can learn the tools to be able to deal with the society that might be that they're growing up in, you know, but then also that grows and I go, well, no, we also want to create that for men too, you know, and how do we create that? We've talked about going on hikes up to the top of Mount Olympus for a initiation and then jumping in the ice bath. And the whole reason I tell this story is because you did something similar with the thesis you guys did on that on a group you guys took out
in Texas.
In Texas. Will you tell a little bit about like
what
you
did that.
With that and how that was kind of like a boys group passage. And a rite of passage, was it not?
Yeah, I'm going to get right to that, but you said something that struck me as pretty important. When you say people are acting the same, they're not growing,
right?
That back to that threshold in life, whether it's you get called today and you're going to go on whatever news program in 3 days, it's huge. You're going to be in front of 5 million people.
Right.
Think about what's going to happen for the next 3 days, how you prepare, reflect on yourself, rise up to the occasion, pray, whatever it is. In that space, you're actually growing. That's where people grow when they go over a threshold. If a family member dies, or, and I think that's why we have pets, you know, for a lot of reasons, and they don't live that long. When a child gets to see the family pet pass away, they go through a lot. They see the world in a different way, the universe or spirituality in a different way. Then when grandma and grandpa pass away, it's not as close as a direct parent, hopefully, right? That's not always the case. And then they're prepared later on because they're shifting. And the most trauma comes when parents outlive their kids. And that's like the worst story if you have kids that you could ever think of. But these things make sense, and it's by design, I believe, for men, young men to grow into full men or mature men, mature masculinity, have to go through these thresholds, and that's where they're actually growing. So if moms, even dads in this present age, if you're picking your kid up every time they fall down, if you're telling them, no, don't try that, if you're telling them you always have to whatever, I mean – I let my kid drive the truck the other day. He's 9 years old. Okay. That's the way I was raised. Make sure it's safe. But that was so exciting for him. That made a mark with him, you know, gave him confidence. Gave him a lot, and it really, really empowered him. If you take all the risk out and they never have to feel like they're powerless to something like getting pinned in a wrestling match. Mono e mono. Family watching, but more importantly for yourself, I got to win this. I trained to do all this. And then maybe you lose, but then you wake up the next day and realize I'm not broke, but I bent. Tomorrow I'll be a little bit better. We're missing that. So if we use the term toxic masculinity, if you want to see more of that, pick up your kid every time they fall down. Don't tell them, I mean, tell them, you know, don't tell them, don't, you know, go on the rope swing. Okay, that's dangerous. There's too much of that. The world is full of dangerous things. We need to work alongside and through and navigate and teach them to navigate the dangerous things versus saying, remove them all. And anyone listening to this remembers the straws, you know, for this and then toothpicks and now Great Britain or UK is no knives now, you know, unless you have paperwork, show you're a chef or whatever. It's just,
That's crazy.
We're trying to remove everything dangerous and that makes really soft people.
Absolutely.
And so what do you think would be a good starting point for rites of passage within our culture?
Initiation. That's number one. Got to be initiated in something. Women have other types of things that they go through when they do a rite of passage. But the first one is very physiological. The menstrual cycle starts. then they have an adult conversation that's forced with their mother,
right?
Or if it's a strong group of women, it could be their aunts and grandma, whatever, and they could celebrate and welcome that. Young men don't go through the same type of physiological deal. It will happen around the age of 13 to 16,
right?
Because the brain grows in massive phases. We see it in a growth spurt, right?
Right, right.
It's like 1 year old, then 3 year old, then seven, then 11, and then the final one is about 15 years old. When that brain is still forming, that's why you say you can't teach, you know, an old dog new tricks,
right?
Or someone made up their political affiliation or their worldview before 22, they're almost totally lost. Unless they're a strong, independent, critical thinker, they can kind of reverse some of that psychology. But the brain, that final stage is around 15, and we have to feed it something. An initiation for something changes. It's that threshold. It'll change that spiritual, universal worldview for that young person. And you said a word earlier, and I swear, I said, I'm going to use this word when we meet today. It was quest.
Right, right.
Vision quest, Native Americans. But the child is presented with something that makes him feel he can be great. If you were asked to be on TV and do that interview, right, to speak, this would be a momentous occasion. Like, I'm going to show up. This is going to define a lot for who I am in the future. Instead, marketers created teenagers. So all you're supposed to do is play games and just hang out, you know, and skateboard or whatever.
Right. During that crucial time.
During that transition. Crucial time. And in that initiation, it can take so many different forms, but from some of the giants and a lot of this stuff that I talk about, it's out there. Like my path started in the 90s, and I was still, even after the Marine Corps, I went through initiation and all of that, but it was an immature masculinity. I wanted more. So I bought Iron John.
Right.
So much of that went over my head. It took years of reading it. And then thank God to YouTube, other people analyzing it going, oh my gosh, that's what he's actually talking about. So after the Marine Corps, the journey started again. I'm looking for some threshold, another way to initiate myself because I didn't have any strong men around me to initiate me. So I'm searching for self-initiation. Go to this country, walk this path like Kung Fu, you know, wandering the desert. Okay.
Yeah.
Join the Marine Corps here. Go to Blackwater. Get dropped off in Afghanistan. Let's go work there. Right. But the best initiation happened really towards the end. And that's when, you know, everything changes. There's maybe there's different levels to it. Luke Skywalker.
Oh, I was going to say Bruce Lee, right? And Bruce the Lee. Dragon going to the different levels.
Different chambers, different levels. Luke Skywalker learned a little bit about his special gift. He was able to do some things. But then there's a major one when you go to see Yoda. That was his rite of passage, right? He sees Yoda. Daniel's son had Miyagi.
Mr. Miyagi.
And isn't that interesting? If you're watching Cobra Kai these days, and it's a really fun show to watch, but the juxtaposition of characters, Johnny Lawrence and Daniel's son, one had a father figure that initiated him. Ceremony was giving him the car and the keys.
Right.
And Johnny Lawrence is kind of stuck in this immature masculinity. He has some of the attributes, courage, discipline, you know, things like that.
Right, right.
Strength. But at the higher level.
Not refined.
Yeah, not refined and not uplifting to everyone around him. Daniel's son's more of a, you know,
constantly
more
competitive.
Of a lover. Generative would be the word. How are you lifting up everyone around you? How do you make everything a win-win versus I have to win to show that I'm the old alpha male archetype that's gotten, you know, really a bad rap?
I think that's a big statement in the immature masculinity, right? Is they're constantly trying to prove themselves. You know, I think there's a thought and a quote around that it's like, it's not the trained martial artist that's out causing harm to others. It's the insecure weakling who's constantly trying to prove themselves. You know, I think that's part of like, you know, the mature masculine is it's like, no, let me raise everybody. You know, when the tide rises, all the boats rise. And I think it's like, the immature is exactly what you just said of like, I'm in competition with everybody. I'm trying to prove myself. I'm trying to prove that I'm better. And it's more competition than collaboration. You know? And I think that what we're trying to do, and I already know that you are already doing this in your life, is create collaboration so that all the boats rise at high tide. You know?
Yeah. Hey, we need better men coming up. It's the bottom line. We need men that think a little bit more deeply, men that can debate, have vibrant debate without getting so butthurt they want to attack someone else or just
not so easily offended.
Not so easily offended. I mean, we're a better society for it if we can. And a lot of the people that grew up, you know, it's funny. Yellowstone is a big show, right?
Yeah.
How many people are gravitating it from that are watching it from Los Angeles, New York City?
Right.
They love it. Why do they love Yellowstone? Traditional values, maybe a harder life, doing things that, wow, I wasn't allowed to do that.
Absolutely.
Hey, break your neck riding a horse or a bull or whatever. Wow, these are wild men. And there is something that's very alluring and very attractive about the wild man. Jordan Peterson says, we don't want tame, weak men. We want wild men that have self-control and discipline, which goes back to the samurai that we talked about. Yeah, he's a farmer. He's a bonsai tree sculptist. But in time of war, game time. Grab the armor.
Yeah.
Let's go. That is a beautiful way to look at real mature masculinity versus the young elephant who doesn't have a bull in his herd. And the young elephants are like Lord of the Flies. And I saw this a long time ago, and I looked for it the other day, and I found a little snippet of it to refresh my memory. These young elephants, the bulls had the most beautiful tusks, so they were poached. The young elephants are raising themselves. They're starting to kill rhinos. They're wondering, why are all the black rhinos being killed off by elephants? This is not in the elephant's nature to do this. It's because they were growing up without a father figure. So they take a bull, drop them into that herd where there's no bulls. Within 3 weeks, that elephant has just showed them the way. Hey, you don't do that. Don't do that. Nope, no, no. That's not the way we do things. And the little elephants are kind of like, all right, there's a new sheriff in town and size matters, right?
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. Because especially at the younger ages and even with children, one thing in which a lot of initiations do, pain. You can't tell a two-year-old, hey, this is how the world works. I wish you really didn't, you know, do that. They may not understand. But in the sacred place of initiating or teaching with love, that little pain might keep them from walking on the railroad tracks.
Right.
Playing with fire. But in the world of, oh, fire's dangerous. I was on the radio a few years ago and they said, oh, guns and kids. When is the right time to train them? As soon as they're interested. If they're showing interest in guns and running around going pew, pew, shooting everything.
Wow.
It's time to put a real gun in their hands the right way. Let them feel the weight, the cool touch, and that it is not a toy. Right. And then you go out and you destroy something with it and they realize this isn't the movies. Because in the movies, that dude died, and I just saw him on this show here. This doesn't mean anything. This doesn't hurt anyone, right? So, hey, knowledge is power. And if we're going to devolve and burn books and say we can't talk about these things, we can't think about these things, or guns are just bad, you don't want to get involved in that, we're crippling them because they're way more capable than we think kids are.
Absolutely.
Extremely more capable than we give them credit for.
To what you're saying is, you know, like we need to build strong men. And it wasn't exactly how you said it. But I think by creating the strong men and the mature masculine, then we all, I know this for sure, want to raise good men and good women. And as our sons and daughters grow up, you know, to be strong and the mature masculine in the sense of the men, well, then we get to move into the grandfather phase and our kids get to have their kids and their daughters. And we get to teach these what lessons in a new way if our sons are raised and daughters are raising their kids in the right way. And now we start to have this better law of nature, and we start to have what you were talking about the grandfather in his place, the father in his place. And I think that, you know, even in the United States, you know, World War I, World War II took a lot of fathers away, you know, made it so that a lot of mothers had to do it. And now we have relationship problems. I feel like, you know, I have been through a divorce and now I'm in a marriage where I love and adore my wife. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's divorce causes that too. And sometimes it's hard to be the great father that we want to be while we're also raising our child that's also in another home. It creates those things. And it's like, how do we talk about these things? How do we discuss these things so that we can have good relationships with our children's mothers, or at least make it about the kids so we can still raise good kids? Because these are definitely, it's not just that that our fathers are dying in wars anymore. It's that, you know, we also, it's, there is an assault on the family, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I think that it is a difficult thing to be able to raise the family in the way that we used to when we were on farms, right? And I think this is all the stuff that we're going to continue to discuss and have conversations about as we try to build these men's groups. And these are the things that we're going to talk about. I think that, you know, we're going to continue to bring people in like Jimmy and other men and have discussions and bring you guys in and open it up to the floor so that we can have hard conversations on fatherhood. We can have thoughts on how we strengthen the body through martial arts. But then guess what? I'm not messing with Jimmy because I already know he's got a concealed probably right in here somewhere. And he's definitely a better shooter than me.
Always.
And we should, right? Always. Yeah, I already do. Utah, man. So exactly. Listen, I might be the baddest dude in every room I walk in. Mm-hmm. Until the art of war changes and it turns into firearms, you know.
And Jimmy's the baddest man in every room.
And it's no, we just, like I said, we all need each other, right? Like I don't think that I don't right. need you, and I don't think that I don't need you, because right. we wouldn't have this podcast if it wasn't for you,
right?
You know. And so this is Adaptive Alphas. Yeah. That's Josh. I always appreciate you. This is Jimmy. You're gonna see more of him, and we're going to have you back because we're going to do another podcast on body, mind, and spirit. And I think I would love to have you on that one. What do you think, Josh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything you want to say as we close this one up and move forward?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so I think just tying everything back together that Jimmy and you, Josh, talked about was – I think it's interesting that we can look in almost every container, whether it's our elders, the lack of respect I see in American culture with our elders and reverence towards our elders, right? They're put in homes, they're separated from family units. And it's interesting because I actually see it in curriculum within school, and I don't know if this is a byproduct of the educational curriculum or whether it's purposeful, but I noticed that with my 10-year-old daughter, it's like every year or every generation, I was taught math a certain way. Now she's taught math a certain way, and it undermines almost the people who've already gone through that process, because it's like, no, we don't do math like that anymore. It's like, you don't even know what you're talking about, Dad. You don't even know what you're talking about, Grandpa. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And so I don't know.
I know exactly what you mean.
It's so
that's not how we do
that's
it.
That's not how we do it anymore. And it's like, okay, cool, but let me show you how we did it before. And it seems simple, and now you're complexifying it for whatever reason, right? Even the curriculum that our kids are being brought up, it's almost teaching separation. But so I'm just looking at all these processes, whether it's the need for rite of passages at these crucial points. And like Jimmy said, the preparation also is where a lot of the magic happens. It's not just going through a process like I'm a better man and it was inadvertent and random, right? It's that in this time to transition from boyhood to manhood, you have to, as an African tribe would do, you have to go hunt a lion and don't come home until you kill one. And if you don't come home, then you're dead. And that's just a part of their rite of passage. Is it bad or good? I don't think that's for us, you know, where somebody sees chaos, another person sees equanimity, right? So I think it's that kind of our ability to create these processes or these rite of passages for men and women alike or boys and girls alike, that is definitely lacking in culture. And I think it does have that ripple effect throughout the different generations. So I think it's so needed to have these conversations. I love that we started with toxic masculinity and then that we were talking about rite of passages and everything, because it's just these are conversations and dialogue that needs to happen. And it's not just dialogue, right? It is our birthright to develop and be self-directed in learning these things and being well-cultured and looking at different cultures to see what they're doing and is it better and should we implement what they're doing because it's working better on real data, not on just theory or, you know, idea or fantasy. Like it's no, these cultures and their family units are strong and this is why they're strong. Now let's implement those things. not be too proud or too prideful or too arrogant or too egoic to say, no, 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 these older ancestral processes were powerful. And that's something that I had to overcome in the last few years, which is I wouldn't even read a book if it wasn't the newest neuroscience, psychology, you know, like, because I didn't believe older processes or 100 or 1,000 year old systems were relevant. But that's so far from the truth, because a lot of the magic and a lot of the most powerful things, I think, are mapped and patternized throughout human our time here on Earth. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
well said.
Josh. One more thing that I would like you to do before we end this is the way that you explained Junto to me with Benjamin Franklin. And it's worth trying to create a brotherhood. Will you explain that to the guest and to Josh?
Yeah, as, what is Junto?
As what that was, because it was powerful. Because I was like, we're trying to do this and you know about it. And I need you to come join us.
Yeah. A friend told me about this 15 years ago. And we had a lot of talks like this on his porch till 3 a.m., whatever. Every world problem, every cultural problem. And it started with him showing me the daily routine for Benjamin Franklin. Mm-hmm. You look it up on, like, Google it.
Benjamin Franklin's daily routine. I've seen it on YouTube.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, I'm lazy. Right? This dude was nonstop. Mm-hmm. And that led into talking about, this is how he lived his life. And then he had something called the Junto. Well, what's that? Well, it's a group of men that may or may not have resources, but they're like-minded. And they have that generative uplifting, the tide rises, all the ships rise, that type of mentality. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they get together and they would mix it up. Mm-hmm. Like if we wanted to solve a problem right now in Salt Lake City, after this show's over, we could identify what it is. Mm-hmm. We have a bigger network between all four of us in here to find out who has an in there or what we can do. You might have financial resources. I might have political connections, whatever it may be. What did they do in the Junto? Created the first post office, right? Hey, we need a post office.
Powerful, yeah.
First library.
Powerful.
Fire department, okay? I mean, these were the things that happened out of the Junto, but also as powerful, they would find out, what is so-and-so doing in town? And we heard that, or she was recently widowed. What does she need? Dude, they circle the wagons. And they would go, take that problem on and make sure her offspring and herself, they were taken care of, protected, taken care of, blah, blah, blah. And they would do that for all these different situations in town or in their community. How do you help? Who needs a hand over here? What does the town need? What do the children need? And they just put their heads together and they'd focus, which is something we don't have in the society at large today. Mm-hmm. Social media, we got this, we got that, bop, 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 bop.
Right.
Back in the farming days, like, you were romancing about, and I do too. Yeah, a lot of us do a certain way.
I have my 9-year-old romancing about that. She's like, that's what I want. I want a house on like a prairie, like a farm. I want to grow. I'm like, you're 9? Are you just overhearing our conversation? It's like, it's so cute though when she's 10, but so cute.
Well, that's super fantastic. And I think that like you just said that, it's like, we have social media and we are so connected, yet you're not so connected if you're just sitting in your house scrolling, gathering this information and not doing anything to rise yourself, or more so important, the people around you up also, right? And I think that, that's what we're doing. That's why we're here today having this conversation. Back to what Josh said about how they used to go through these initiations and it used to be have to go out and get a lion. It's like, stay tuned because we're going to do these workshops and we're going to do initiations and we're going to hike to the top of Mount Olympus and you're going to make it up.
And then we're going to do harder shit than that.
When we don't get back down or when we get back down, we're going to do an ice bath, right? And this is just the simple initiation, right? If you don't make it through this, then you don't get to come out with us and go to the gun range and shoot these Iron Horse, weapons. If you haven't seen them, by the way, you need to go check them out because they're pretty awesome.
By the way, I brought something. Let's show it to him. Can you grab it?
Let's go.
This is not this.
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
This looks is like Jimmy not a plug because that's just shameful. This. Here, is I'll turn it on for you. Gift from one man, one good man.
Wow.
To another.
This is awesome. Congratulations.
There you go. He's been eyeballing him.
Let's see it.
What? So check this out.
Are you going to cry?
We were at this place. I might get a tear. We were at a place called at Mac's Place. And a mutual friend of ours, Brady, took me in the back and showed me some of these Iron Horse weapons. And
well, look at your own now.
Buddy. Are you kidding me, bro? Shotgun.
No, that's symbolic for a lot of stuff.
Buddy, it's the shotgun.
That is amazing.
Are you kidding me, bro?
You want to just take one? You want to take that vlog cam?
You guys can just talk for me for a minute.
Oh, you just open it.
Hey, or, now we can go shoot shotgun, shoot some clay pigeons and whatnot.
Anytime you just open it, it opens up. There you go. Okay.
I mean, check that out. Does this have one?
Made in the USA, baby.
Made in the USA, baby. Iron Horse Firearms. Not even why we brought Jimmy on.
That is impressive, bro.
I had
awesome.
No idea this was happening.
That is amazing.
I know. I was super sneaky about it.
Yeah, that's so
cool.
Oh,
there's a box there. Everyone forgets.
So that's the best defense, home defense system right there.
Well, it's you know, for the right person, it's a great defense weapon. They're reliable. Right. They're pump action. They're legal everywhere.
Look, Josh, you're already about a 9 out of 10 on a scale, you know, like look-wise. Now you're a 10 out of 10. You're a 10 out of 10 right now. Yeah, yeah. You're what we call a dime piece now. So, dude, that looks so badass! Holy shit!
Yeah, got one shot.
Oh, one shot shell. So you know it works.
Well, much appreciated, brother.
Of course, man.
I can't.
My pleasure, dude. My pleasure.
Wow, that
was super fun for me.
I mean, what? Okay, well, okay. Let's go. Let's finish this up.
What time do we have? Oh shit! Don't point at me.
56, 24. All right. 56 minutes.
Are you kidding?
Perfect.
Okay. Well, let me clean this up.
There you go.
You gotta be kidding me, bro.
All right. Do we wrap?
Yeah. No, we have not wrapped. Well, that's the episode with Jimmy. You bring guests on, you get shotguns. That's, I guess, what happens. Oh wait, what happened with the wall? Did you knock it down? All right. Thanks for tuning in, guys. We will see you guys next time on the Adaptive Alphas podcast. Thanks for tuning in.